George has it underneath off a pass from Thaddeus Young. Lobs it to the rim, and it's dunked by Turner.
Right over Courtney Lee.
All right, and welcome into the Sideline Guys podcast. I'm Pat Boylan, Pacers radio host and sideline reporter. Joining us, Jeremiah Johnson, Pacers TV host and sideline reporter. We've done a couple of these on the road. Nothing trumps this one, though. I'm in downtown Indianapolis. I stayed here. My duties keep me here in Bankers Life Fieldhouse. We go across the pond in England, London, I think in the O2 Arena right now. Jeremiah Johnson is with us where they're going to play the game tomorrow. I have so many questions to start with, but let's just begin with, how are you doing? How's the O2 Arena?
The O2 Arena is phenomenal, and yes, I'm watching the Pacers with their one full practice in this arena prior to Thursday's game. The team had a practice at City Sport, which is basically like a workout facility gym with a gymnasium in the basement on Tuesday, and that was a very intense practice, and we shared some videos via Twitter, and we'll show a little bit more even on Pacers Live pregame, but this is the one workout at the arena where the team will play the Nuggets, and so I'm watching practice now. If you hear some shoes squeaking, that great sound, the ball going through the net, maybe a whistle here or there, that's the background. So a little ambiance for the Sideline Guys podcast, and happy to watch this a little bit and tell you what we've experienced, but all in all, it's been a successful trip so far. Everybody's having a really good time, and I think the most important thing is we're seeing a little bit of a mix of work and play, and I think that's the priority on this trip, was to let everybody experience some of the sights and sounds of this unique experience, but then realize this is a regular season game, a team that has won 5 consecutive games and needs to keep this momentum going against the Denver Nuggets. And so I think we've had a little bit of a mix of both, and all in all, I'd say very successful trip up to this point.
Our pick 3, which we're going to do a little bit later, is going to be favorite sites from London. We're going to weigh on back and forth in that, so we can get to that topic specifically coming up in just a little bit. First thing I want to ask is, and part of the reason, at least I think, one of the many reasons why you guys left Sunday for a Thursday tip is just to get used to a lot of different things. One of those is jet lag. How has that getting over the jet lag experience been? Because in my experience, the going over there was kind of tough. It took me a little while.
Yeah, I should have asked you a few more questions since you are a world traveler at the ripe old age of, 26? Is that what you are?
26.
26, yeah. And I'm just turned 39, making my first trip to Europe, and I didn't think it was that big of a deal. And normally I'm someone on every flight home from a game, especially if the flight is after a game, I catch some shut-eye. Even if there's an afternoon flight the day before a game, I usually fall asleep at some point. And we were about 3.5-4 hours into the flight to London on Sunday night, and I hadn't even tried to fall asleep. And I said, I think this is going to come back to haunt me. I did end up getting about 3 hours sleep, but with the time change, when our plane landed and we were on the buses to head to the hotel, it's 9 or 10 in the morning. And actually, it was about 10 or 10:30, I believe. Traffic was awful because the tube system, which is the subway system in Europe, happened to be on strike on Monday. So the tubes were not operating until 6 p.m., I think this is odd that they have a strike that's scheduled to end at a certain time. I think that kind of defeats the purpose of the strike. But regardless, traffic was awful. So it took us a couple of hours, I think, felt like at least, to get from the airport to the hotel. And at that point, we were scheduled to go on a tour of the Churchill War Rooms. And so during that tour, it was a fantastic tour. But I was so tired, and I found myself at different times getting tired, and throughout the rest of the night, I called it a night about 9:30 here on my first night ever in London, but by Tuesday, I was acclimated, and I felt pretty normal on Tuesday, and now that it's Wednesday, and I'm talking to you at 3 in the afternoon local time, but back in Indiana, it's around 9, it feels like the afternoon, so everything's good now, but it did take a good 24 hours to get acclimated.
I saw the schedule that you guys – that was roughly drafted for you guys, and I know things have changed, moved around since you've been there. You mentioned one of those. Can you kind of take us through how a general day is going with you guys? Because one thing that struck me – and I know maybe it's a little bit different for those who are guests of the team and then the players, and then maybe you're kind of in an in-between zone. I don't know. I'd like to get your take on how you've decided to go between these different events, between work and pleasure. But, Jeremiah, one thing that really struck me about the schedule is it's pretty regimented. There's a lot going on. They pack a lot into those days, even the Monday, Tuesday, where we were a few days before the game.
Yeah, it definitely is a little bit of a mix from my perspective. I participated in the tour on Monday afternoon because I knew I would be busy working Tuesday and Wednesday and not able to join the rest of the travel party that is here. There are sponsors here. There are some, you know, front office folks and other people with different responsibilities that are there to soak up the experience a little bit and are not the type of people that actually come to a practice. Now, we have some work to do for the television broadcast, and for me, it is a work trip. So I did not participate in the tours Tuesday or Wednesday afternoon, but the players are probably similar to a schedule like I have. They have some of their own time on their own, but they have meetings and film and training staff appointments as well. So, you know, there aren't a lot of times for free time for the players, but that Monday was really good because practice was scheduled, and it really was going to be more of a shoot around to get guys out, but because the flight was delayed a little bit and then there was some with all the traffic, it was a smart decision, I think, was made by the coaching staff and the trainers to go ahead and call off Monday and let everyone, players included, have that day to get acclimated. So you're fitting a lot in, and then you have somebody like Paul George who's announcing a new shoe, and he's got some other appearances. Miles Turner on Tuesday had an appearance at Tissot and where he was there with Dikembe Mutombo. So there are some business interests involved, and there are also events that the NBA puts on because this is an important week for the entire NBA to help spread the game to fans in Europe. And so prior to the practice on Wednesday, there was a junior NBA clinic where Miles Turner, Jeff Teague, and some of the other Pacers participated in an hour-long session with students, youngsters here from London and the area. And so there isn't much free time, but in a way, this is their life. This is what happens even when they're home. Not much free time when they're on the road. There's practice, there's shoot around. It's not a lot different. It's just that when you do have the free time, maybe when you be more apt to, like the guys that bring the PlayStation 4s or the Xboxes, they're not in the rooms working doing that. They're taking advantage of the free time to see some sights and experience some things.
I'm curious if you're able to tell this in the time that you've been over there. You know, if Paul George walks around, not just in Indianapolis, but anywhere in the U.S., he's going to be a major known commodity, probably going to get fans running over to him, trying to get autographs, things like that. But I think about it, you know, if a top-flight soccer player came over here, I certainly think he'd be recognized. Let's just use Ronaldo, for example. And he's an international brand, maybe even probably more than Paul is. But maybe even just a top player from that plays over in Europe came over here, he wouldn't necessarily have that same kind of recognition. What kind of recognition do those guys have over there? Is this a big deal? Is it too big of a city to tell? Can you tell that there's somewhat of a gap between, you know, the fandom of the NBA here and what it is over in London?
Yeah, it definitely depends on where you go because London is such a big city, so expansive in that you are in different parts and you can talk to somebody on the street and ask them about the NBA or ask them about the Pacers and they are not familiar. But then at the same time, you can be in another area and Paul George would be mobbed. So it definitely depends on where you go. But I've been impressed by the two practices that we've attended, the amount of media coverage and attention that the Pacers, and then specifically like Paul George and Miles Turner, when it's their turn to talk to the media, you can tell there is a genuine appreciation for their talents and their superstardom. And even I would say this too, it's almost like a playoff or a Super Bowl or an NCAA tournament type of media feel. During the 15 to 20 minute media availability, you're seeing breakout sessions and one-on-one interviews with guys up and down the roster. A normal Pacer practice in town, there'll be two or three players requested and some group interviews, but we're seeing one-on-one interviews, extended conversations with Monte Ellis, with Kevin Serafin, obviously with his French connection. He's a popular person over here. There have been some French television stations that have done interviews with Kevin. Thaddeus Young has done a lot of interviews. People are finding out what we already know about what a great interview C.J. Miles is, as well as Glenn Robinson III. I've seen guys have to do some liners where they record, hey, watch the NBA on such and such channel. So you can tell how much of an appetite there is for the NBA, how good this is for the Pacers, because with the Pacers being here, it's their connection to some of these people's first NBA game. So long story short, or a long answer to your question about Paul George, not everyone knows everything about the NBA, but those that do, I think, are fanatical about it.
We'll get into the discussion of the game and some more on-court stuff here as we move on into the podcast. I wanted to focus, you know, this beginning part more on just London and the trip and some of the things away from the game that you guys are going to get doing to do. Typically, we save our pick three for later in the show. Let's just get to it now because I want to talk about some of these specific things. Our pick three this week, where we decide on three different items within a topic. Last week was teams in the NBA that were in the playoffs that we thought wouldn't make it. So it's all over the place. And this week it's natural. Three favorite things in London. Typically you pick one, I pick one, and we come together for one. I've been to London, so I'm going to give one of mine. But since you're there, I want you to take two of them. And I want one of them to be a typical touristy thing maybe that you've done that you really liked that everybody goes to London and does. And then maybe one be, you guys have sort of had some VIP experience and to be with an NBA team has certainly afforded you things that maybe not the common person would get to do. Maybe something that, a little behind the scenes-y in any direction that those can be. So first pick three, you can take that in either direction that you want. Favorite thing that you have done in London or seen in London so far is what?
Well, probably the best experience that when I looked at our itinerary of the week, besides the game that I was probably most looking forward to, was a private dinner and tour of Kensington Palace. And, you know, just seeing that house, that mansion, I should say, and everything that goes along with it, and just walking around with the team, with the players. Everyone was dressed up in nice suits. We had about an hour and a half to sort of walk around, and then we had a nice dinner with a harp playing, and you just felt like royalty. And I think that's one of the things that when you look around, there are different times, and that's what makes London so unique, is you see the royalty. You don't feel like it most of the time when you're hopping in and out of a taxi or the tube, or you see a phone booth and different things that are unique to London. But we felt like royalty on Tuesday night, and that was a unique experience, and I definitely would at this time like to show and send my appreciation to the Simon family and everyone at Pacers Sports and Entertainment that made an experience like that possible. And I really enjoyed seeing the players and their wives that were able to attend, and family members, how much they appreciated as well. These are NBA players that you might think they're oblivious to, you know, things like that. They understand that this is a unique experience, a once-in-a-lifetime experience, and they were posing for pictures. And so that is something that would be under the VIP category, I think, for what you were referencing. And there are tours that you can have there, the general public, but what we had was certainly a little bit of an exclusive VIP event, and it was awesome to experience.
For me, I was in London over the past summer, and I'd been there one other time before with the Olympics, but every time you go, you know, there's the list of touristy things that you need to do, and you know, the list in London's fairly expansive, but to me, there's something about Big Ben that just really stands out. The architecture, you know, the fact that it's their governmental building, not just the clock tower, but the building itself. When you get across the river on the other side of it, and you kind of get to look in it and just see how big it is, the architecture, that gold kind of bronze glow that it gives off. I think it's one of those things that you certainly have to view in person once. It's certainly a bucket list thing, but one of those things that you really can't get an appreciation for until you're over there and until you see it. And I saw some players taking pictures with it. And, some people in America may not realize Big Ben is not a quarterback for the Steelers. Big Ben is a long and old and spectacular government building that has the Big Ben part is the actual clock tower. Parliament building is the other part of it. But to me, of all the things I saw, and Buckingham Palace may be a close second, but just of the touristy things, that really stood out to me. And just kind of watching these players' Twitter and Facebook posts, you've seen a lot. I saw Miles Turner doing one with it. I think Paul George doing one with it. You can tell that that's kind of been a central focus of some of these guys and their touristy things that they've been able to do when they've been over there.
And they must have listened to you before coming over here, because that is exactly the spot where they had their team photo opportunity prior to practice on Tuesday. And during Pacers Live pregame at 2:30 on Thursday afternoon, I'll do a little bit of a day in the life, and it was the day in the life of the Pacers on Tuesday that started with that photo op with Big Ben in the background right on the banks of the River Thames, and then seeing Parliament as well, not far from the Eye of London, which I think is fascinating to see this gigantic Ferris wheel on the water and then to see Big Ben across the way. So you just look around and you soak up the atmosphere, and that's what everyone there was doing, was taking photos. And we talked to a few people that just asked them what they knew about the Pacers or the NBA, and most of them were tourists. One gentleman, the first person we talked to, was from Australia, and the second was a female from Chile. So a lot of people there are not necessarily from London, and that makes sense. If you live here, you're probably not going there to just soak up the touristy scenery, but it's pretty cool touristy activities. And so the players were appreciative of that. And even Miles Turner, I think he went and took some photos at Big Ben prior to the team photo. He did that on Monday night. So I've been impressed by the architecture, as you said. Impressive stuff.
All right, pick three. You talked about kind of your inside tour on Kensington Palace. We brought up Big Ben. Give us one more thing over there that you've really enjoyed that maybe stands out.
Well, I wanted to come over here and have some fish and chips, and I still have plans for my Wednesday dinner to be a little more casual and to hopefully go into a pub, because we've had, you know, some opportunity to have some social settings and some drinks, but haven't had the true pub experience. But just yesterday, while we were driving, we had takeout fish and chips. And, you know, you might think, oh, you know, it's just fish and chips, but this literally was a full-length piece of fish. Now, it didn't have the head and the tail removed, but it was amazing. When you think of things, it's kind of like Chicago-style deep-dish pizza. It gets a lot of attention, and most people that respect what it is that any particular place their specialty food is, but there are others who think it's overrated. Well, I would say in this case, the fish and chips are not overrated, and this was just one regular establishment. I don't think it was particularly famous or a great recommendation on Yelp, but it was amazing the piece of fish that I got for my fish and chips. And so I'm going to experience a little bit more of that and maybe a pint as well later tonight.
Yeah, I think you've deserved one of those. One thing I'd like to know, you've been over there. One thing that was interesting to me is the fact that, you know, it's a big city, and when it's your first time in there, just like going to New York, you know, for the first time, it's easy to get overwhelmed, you know, by the enormity of the place. But similar to New York in a way, they do speak English. And I know you're with a traveling party, so maybe makes it a little bit different. But they do speak English. If you need help, the people do speak English there. But there are also times, I don't know if you've experienced this when you're in London, and somebody says something and you can tell it's in English, but the phrasing's different. The words they use for things, loo for the bathroom, you know, obviously football is soccer, bangers and mash. You hear mind the gap. It's such an interesting combination to me of, in some ways, it can feel like going to a big city in the U.S. because, you know, there's so much going on. It's so busy. You have to watch when you're crossing the road because they drive like crazy people over there.
You got to look left, left,
see,
right?
See, that always messed with me, too. Yeah. I look left, right, up, down. I was so paranoid of getting run over. But just kind of that balance between, it's a big city that speaks English, but it's pretty easy to tell right away that you're not in America.
Yeah, exactly. And the way they talk, I think if I was over here for an extended period of time, I would generally I would pick up the accent, because you cannot help to, you know, say the way you're spoken to and talk the way people talk to you. My first television job was in Eastern Kentucky, and after about a year, and I only worked there for 15 months, I had a little bit of Southern draw. So the accent is unique. I like how, just like I said, the River Thames, instead of saying the Thames River, the river comes first. And a parking spot was not a parking lot. It was a car park, I believe is how they called it where we went today. So we're working with a freelance photographer who's based in London, and it's been great because he can tell us some of the ins and outs of what we don't know about London. He also knows how to get around. I'll throw in an extra pick three, and it's maybe not a positive, but it is not easy to get anywhere around here. The roads are so narrow. There are bikes that are basically, at any point in time, if you opened your door at some point, you could literally take some bike out, because they're just weaving in and out of traffic all over the place on these extremely narrow roads. So that's one challenging aspect, and it does take sometimes up to an hour to go about 5 or 6 miles, depending on the time you're hoping to do that. So that's one of the things that would keep me maybe from ever relocating here.
Let's focus this now over to some of the basketball side. The game's at the O2 Arena. You're at the O2 Arena. We could hear the buzzer in the background a minute ago. One thing that I asked some of the players before they left was, you know, 5-game winning streak. obviously good. Now your regimen completely changes. You have, you know, 4 or 5 days off from a game. Let's see, Saturday to Thursday from a game. You go to a different country. You know, you get out of your rhythm a little bit. What's your take on? Does it still feel like the Pacers have a 5-game winning streak? Because it's been a while since they've played, and you're not even in the U.S.
Yeah, I would say in the demeanor, yes, you can tell that they're on a winning streak, that they've been playing well because the spirits are so high, the mood is very good around this team. But it does feel like even the most recent win, and really that 2-game homestand against Brooklyn and New York, it seems like a long time ago, and it almost feels like a different season because of the experience this is. And I referenced the NCAA tournament because I did cover that quite a bit during my days at Fox 59, that it has that feel because usually when you're going to the NCAA tournament, you're there for 2 or 3 days, you're doing a lot of media, you're in a new environment, and you're building up kind of for one game, and that's really the way the Pacers are in this situation. So it's more like that to me than even a playoff series, but it has a bit of a playoff or a postseason feel. It doesn't feel like the regular season, and it just feels completely different than the first 38 games of the season. So it'll be interesting to see how they react, and I think more importantly, how they come back from this trip, an important home game on Monday, and then a 3-game road trip, 3 and 4, to see if they can keep that momentum to carry over. I'm guessing that Denver is using this in a situation where they need a little bit of a break in routine, and they hope that can benefit them. They've lost 5 straight, and the Pacers just hope to somehow keep that enthusiasm. But the way they start the game, with the intensity they play with the way they defend and push the tempo, if they can play the same way, I think it'll come back to them pretty quickly. But it does have a very different and unique feel to everything that we're experiencing, and you don't know if that momentum will carry over.
Yeah, it's interesting because that game, even though it was only a few days ago, that game on Saturday against New York, it does kind of feel like it was in another place and another time. And I know being here in Indianapolis during this time, the office is a ghost town right now because A, so many people are with you, but B, there's league meetings in Orlando too. So there's like nobody in the office. There's like 4 or 5 days in between games. It feels like it's like a part of the season that's just completely removed from it. I guess that might not necessarily be a positive when you carry this long win streak and then have to change everything up. But a positive of the whole situation is this is technically a Denver Nuggets home game, so both teams are having to adjust, whereas the Pacers would have to adjust, you know, to going to Denver and to playing in their building. It's a neutral site game. It's technically a Denver home game, so maybe from that aspect there is a little bit of advantage to Pacers, and that it kind of feels like both teams are playing a road game.
Yeah, that's exactly true. You know, Denver... it'll be interesting to see the crowd, I think. Who will have the bigger crowd? I think it'll be a pretty, you know, there'll be fans from both, but the fans support. 10 minutes this game sold out, and I've heard different people, the amount they had to pay on the secondary market. So this is a very big deal. It'll be a different atmosphere. It'll be a lively venue and arena, and it should be a great experience for those even in the arena and even those watching at home. We hope to be able to portray or to send some of that experience through your television sets.
Have they been able to keep up a regular practice schedule there? Because I think, correct me here if I'm wrong again, day one practice was canceled, correct?
Yeah, basically on Monday. And it wasn't going to ever be an intense practice. I think it was one of those to just get everybody out and about and through, you know, maybe sweat a little bit to get them doing something. So the two practices, though, I mean, how often do they have two full practices between games anyway? So a regular practice on Tuesday, a regular practice on Wednesday. It'll be up to Nate McMillan whether they do a shoot around on Thursday morning, because if they got enough work in, you just never know on that. Sometimes they make a decision at night on that. So I'm not aware about that, but a full practice schedule and I think some good, important work. And by all accounts, everyone is good to go. Obviously, Rodney Stuckey is with the team and he's still injured, but everybody else should be ready to go.
You look at Denver, you mentioned their 5-game losing streak. Just looking at this matchup specifically, I know it's going to start here in the U.S. at 3 o'clock, and hopefully those who are able to will catch the telecast, which begins at 2:30. But you look at Denver, a team who's now 14-23. They're in a spot where they're looking to turn things around. And, you know, looking at that 5-game losing streak, they've either played, you know, good teams or bad teams. There's a San Antonio, an OKC, a Golden State loss in there, but they also lost to Philly. Also lost to Sacramento. This kind of feels like a team, and there's, I think, a handful of teams right now, as we get close to this midway point, a team who needs to figure out quickly. Now, in the West, you look at the standings, they're not out of it because that eight spot is so separated from the top seven. But they sort of seem like they might be in a bit of a desperate mindset, because if they don't get things turned around in the next three or four games, it might be a long road for the rest of the season in terms of trying to compete if they dig themselves too big of a hole.
Yeah, the only thing they have going for them would be that Western Conference, and what a logjam it is at eight. And, you know, depending on what they do at the trade line deadline, they're one of those teams that people often reference as having a lot of assets where they could get someone who could be a difference maker. They're going through some injuries, and at this point they have four key players, including Danilo Gallinari, including Gary Harris, Kenneth Faried, who are questionable. So that'll be a big storyline heading into the game, because if they don't have three or four of those players, I'd expect they maybe have one or two of them, but that'll definitely affect their chances on Thursday. And a team that is desperate to get hot very soon, or they could go the other direction and try to accumulate assets. But I think Denver is in a position where they've got so many young players that they almost don't have enough playing time for them all when healthy, that I think they would try to package a couple to get somebody good, and that would keep them in this mix in the Western Conference, because it does not seem like anybody is going to pull away in that fight for the eighth spot.
Yeah, that eighth spot, which of course would likely get Golden State in round one. You mentioned there's injuries, but if healthy, this is a team that maybe is lacking that star, but the depth is impressive. You look at, let's see, 8 guys who average 9 points or more, 6 who are at 10 points or more. It's a deep team that, you know, had the sixth man last year, and certainly that aspect will be interesting, because while the Pacers have the Paul George, Miles Turner, Jeff Teague, you know, those are probably the three most recognizable names perhaps between the two teams. Denver, despite the fact that they're struggling, their depth I think is impressive.
Yeah, no, I think Denver is a team that going into the season people thought could challenge for a playoff spot in the Eastern Conference. They do have talent, they do have young players, and they're a little bit maybe like Milwaukee in that they have a lot of good young players that are maybe waiting to make that breakthrough move. And this is important for that franchise that sometimes struggles with fans in Denver and filling that arena and getting identity. And so I think that they are looking to kind of use this experience to kind of help build their fan base just a little bit as well. So they're a team that has a bright future. The one thing I was talking with Kristen Airy about earlier today, you know, Denver is a place the Pacers have a lot of trouble winning. So that benefits the Pacers that they don't have to go to Denver and play, because this is Denver's home game. So the Pacers get a neutral game out of what is one of the toughest road spots in the NBA with the altitude and with the struggles the Pacers have had in Denver. And this gets to be a neutral court game. So in a way, that kind of helps the Pacers out just a little bit. Going to have to wrap here pretty soon as practice is wrapping up here at the O2 Arena.
Yeah, let's wrap this up here in a moment. But the broadcast side of things for you, how different are they? Just considering, you know, not only the different place, but, you know, is the building equipped to do what you're normally used to doing?
Oh, yes, this is a world-class facility. From our technical perspective, we have less cameras and crew. It'll be a little bit of a world feed. So at times, instead of Jamie Burns and Max Linewand picking the shots and being able to call up their own replays, they'll be taking a feed and providing it to Kristen Airy and Quinn Buckner. So if you're watching and you notice anything different, our goal is to try to make it as similar to what a normal broadcast would be. But that would be the difference, in that we don't have full control over everything that's shown. We do have one camera that we can use some of our own shots with, and that'll be the camera that I do sideline hits and in-game hits. And the other difference would be studio use will be done from St. Louis, so there'll be a pregame show hosted from St. Louis that I'll have a number of contributions for. But we will be utilizing the studio in St. Louis with graphics and things there as well to help complement our coverage here in London.
All right, Jeremiah Johnson out in London. Anything I haven't asked you that you would like our voluminous number of podcast listeners to know about?
Well, I guess what's the last thing I need to do? If there's one thing that I haven't done yet, and I haven't done too many things, I shared a little bit of them, what should I do, Pat Boylan?
Oh, yeah, that's a... I don't know. I honestly, I think I've been watching all this. I think you've done a lot of stuff that I see. One thing that you probably aren't going to be able to. Wimbledon's pretty cool, but that's kind of out of the way. That's not an easy. That takes some time. It's about I think an hour west on the tube. Wimbledon's cool if you have some time, but that's kind of tends to be a half day kind of thing. I don't. You guys are so busy. I don't know if you have time for that.
Yeah, I probably don't have time for a whole lot. Maybe we come back at the next time Pat Boylan makes one of his European adventures. And I will tell you, Kristen Airy has prepared his phone has better service than mine, so I'm using his phone to do this podcast. We're making it work. Hopefully, it sounds crystal clear. But he's getting anxious. He doesn't want to miss the bus. So hate to cut this one short.
Soccer,
but there we go.
Tell him soccer.
Hey, you know what? He wants to talk.
Hey, I'm about to get a picture taken. We're not even at 30 minutes yet. Pad, so my son said I had to do it.
All right. Well, Chris is in awe. We've got some soccer stars here in the house, so he wants his phone to go get a picture taken. We got to wrap this up.
All right, Chris, JJ, thanks so much for your time. Enjoy London. We'll look forward to seeing you back here in a few days.
Thanks, Pat.